Welcome to Betrayal Recovery Radio, the official podcast of APSATS, the Association of Partners of Sex Addict Trauma Specialists, hosted by Dr. Jake Porter. APSATS is a nonprofit organization providing professional training and compassionate support to partners affected by problematic sexual behavior and betrayal trauma. In each episode, Dr. Jake guides a conversation of enlightening insights and practical tools to empower those affected by sex addiction and betrayal trauma to use their voices and live their values. The mission of Betrayal Recovery Radio is to offer hope to those in need of healing and growth to those moving through grief. And now, here's your host, Dr. Jake Porter.
Welcome to this week's episode of Betrayal Recovery Radio. I am your host, Dr. Jake Porter, and I'm excited to introduce you to today's show. Betrayal can be devastating to your partner and to your relationship, but many couples still love one another and are committed to mending their relationships. In order to do this, it's important for the party who was unfaithful to understand the traumatic nature of betrayal and understand how to respond sensitively to their partner's pains. It's also really critical that they adopt a stance of honesty and transparency and commitment in their relationships. And this often includes participating in a facilitated therapeutic disclosure and an emotional restitution process. Today, to help us go deeper on these ideas and concepts and needs, I'm going to share with you a conversation that took place between Dr. Barbara Steffens and Kathy Reynolds. Dr. Barbara Steffens really needs no introduction on this podcast if you've been a longtime listener. Barbara Steffens is a licensed professional clinical counselor. She's a certified professional coach. She is also the founding president of APSATS, and her work in the field of betrayal trauma has really revolutionized things in a way that cannot be overstated. She's going to be joined in conversation with Kathy Reynolds, who is another APSATS trained coach and works with me here at my practice in Daring Ventures. And the two of them are going to talk about these essential components for relational recovery after the discovery of betrayal. Both of these ladies have lived it. They now work it professionally, leading others through this process of healing. And you're going to gain a lot of insights from them as they move their way through this conversation. So sit back and enjoy and learn from this conversation with Kathy and Barbara.
Hello, thank you for joining us for the 2022 Choose Connection Summit, From Grief to Growth. I am Kathy Reynolds, and I am so proud to introduce to you Dr. Barbara Steffens. Barbara is a licensed professional clinical counselor, a certified clinical partner specialist, and a certified partner coach. She specializes in helping women recover from sexual betrayal, and is also a sought-after speaker and presenter on special issues related to partners of sexual addicts. She's also the founding president of the Association of Partners of Sex Addicts Trauma Specialists, APSATS for short, and there's a reason why we shorten that Absolutely. To APSATS. APSATS is an organization that provides training and certification of clinical partner specialists and partner trauma coaches. Barbara has counseled and coached betrayed spouses and partners for over 20 years, and her research on trauma after betrayal has revolutionized the field. Mm. Barbara also consults with other professionals and provides training for those who want to help partners heal. She's the co-author of Your Sexually Addicted Spouse, How Partners Can Cope and Heal, which has dramatically affected changes in the lives of those who are victims and the professionals who are trained to serve them. So our topic today for this conversation is after betrayal, the power of asking for what you need. So welcome, Barbara. I'm so happy to have you.
Thanks, Kathy. This is exciting to be able to do, just to have an opportunity to give encouragement mm-hmm. to people that are on this journey. So my favorite thing to do.
You know, me too. Me too. I mean, there's no greater honor. Mm-hmm. So can you tell us just a little bit about your topic for today?
Well, I was thinking it might be helpful to talk about helping partners ask for what they need, because after betrayal, especially in that very first period of time where it just feels chaotic and scary, and it feels like the bottom has dropped out of your world, it's hard to even know what you need. And then it's harder to know, what do I have a right to ask for? Sometimes partners, I work a lot with partners from faith backgrounds, and they can get really confused or confusing messages about, what do I do? What do I have a right to do? And my first words to partners, it's always, you have a right to ask for whatever you need. No one can take that right away from you, because you have the right to choose for yourself. So empowering partners changes everything, because then they can, they're still kind of foggy, it's still scary, all of those things. But if those of us who come alongside and encourage can remind them that they have a voice and they have a right and their needs are real, then we can start to encourage them on ways of identifying what they need, but then how to ask for it and how to protect themselves. Because, you know, they feel so vulnerable. They feel so raw. They don't know what's going to happen next. It just feels chaotic and crazy. So first steps is usually just, what do you need? And so, and they'll say, I have no idea what I need. So just starting to unpack that with partners. So I just wanted to talk about that, and then maybe give a really simple process for thinking through, what do they need, and then how to put that in a statement for yourself and probably a statement for your loved one, so that they know what you need and then what you're going to do if they can't give you what you need.
Well said.
And so that's what it is.
Yeah. I appreciate you adding that part about maybe your loved one. Because some boundaries and requests don't have to be spoken. They're for us.
Yeah, that's right. So, that's right.
Yes. Thank you so much for that, Barb. I mean, when, as you're sharing, I just, you know, because I am a betrayed partner, and I just feel it in my gut, just the fire in my belly of getting to empower women to ask for what they need.
Yeah.
It changes everything. It truly does. And just to see the look on their faces when we tell them, you can ask for whatever you want, is just priceless. Yeah. And to watch them just come up out of that muck and empowered and learn how to ask for what they need, even though it's kind of like a baby fawn just learning to walk, but it's just beautiful. Yeah. So let me just ask you, how did you get into doing this work, and how long have you been doing it?
Oh my goodness. Well, I've been doing it for probably 25 years now. I say I'm trying to move into some kind of retirement, which really just means I'm shifting focus a little bit. So like, I'm not president of APSATS. I help, and I'm doing some other things for HAPSATS. But how did I get into it? I was a trained clinical mental health provider and had worked with women and children who were in abusive situations or experienced relational trauma, staff of a church. So I'd done a lot of things. And then one day I went to my computer and I clicked on something. And it changed everything. And so in the middle of the fog and the craziness of that, my training kicked in to help me at least have some way of understanding not only what was going on that I saw on the computer, that was a problem that needed to be addressed immediately, but also kicked into me knowing how to ask for what I needed, which a lot of women just don't have.
Right.
And then as I was healing and our relationship was healing, I was really just hearing, for me as a person of Christian faith, was really hearing that there's a redemption part of this and that God was calling me to help other women. So I started to do that. And as I started to hear their stories, I recognized trauma. But no one was talking about trauma. They were calling partners these other things like co-addicted or co-addict or codependent or co-something.
Right.
Rather than recognizing that their life just blew up and that their whole body, mind, spirit was shattered and confused and traumatized. Mm-hmm. So that then led me to go back to school, which is always a crazy thing to do, get my doctorate so that I could do research. And so I did the research that then became the focus of the book, Your Sexually Addicted Spouse, which was that partners experience extreme trauma.
Mm-hmm.
Not all, but most. 70% in my study met all the criteria for post-traumatic stress. That's significant. And so then I knew that this is what I was supposed to do, was to get that word out, that this is real, this is trauma. And so I started to speak professionally with other clinicians, and the rest is, you know, now we have APSATs, now we have trained partner clinicians and coaches, mm-hmm. and training, and the field has changed.
It really has. It's just amazing. I'm so grateful that, you know, this had began before my own personal discovery. I don't know. I can't imagine where I would be without this. So I'm personally, and I know I speak for all the other women out there when I say thank you for giving your life to us and to better us and our marriages and our families. So thank you. Thank you so much. So
tell you what an honor.
Yeah, it is. It is. So earlier you had said when you were talking about the initial impact, mm-hmm. and the partners just not having a clue what they need. Yeah. You know, I remember a friend of mine actually, and I said, who had had her discovery, and I said, "What do you need?" And she's like, "I don't know what I need. Tell mm-hmm. me, what do I need?"
Yeah.
And so that's my question for you. What are some common things that partners need for their own health and growth?
Mm-hmm. Well, early on, they need to breathe. It is just, you watch them and they're just holding everything in because they're afraid if they start to breathe, they'll start to relax and then something else horrible will happen. So to know that they have support, they need that. They need to know they're not alone.
Mm-hmm.
They need to know that there's nothing in the world that they could ever have done or could do to cause this to happen to them, that it's not a reflection of them, but everything in their mind and their brain trying to figure out how did this happen. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the first things they're going to think is, what did I do wrong? What didn't I do I shouldn't have done? Yeah. Because we want to feel like we have some control over things that happened to us, but this is something they couldn't control. They didn't know. Mm-hmm. So they need to know that. They need support around that.
Mm-hmm.
And then they need to exercise their voice. Now that can be a hard part because if they're not breathing, it's hard to use your voice. You know, right. if you don't know what you're thinking and feeling, it's hard to use your voice. So it's settling into a process of saying, my voice matters, my needs matter. And that's going to take cheerleaders, you know, the people that are going to remind them that you are valuable, you are worthy, mm-hmm. and you are worth caring about and caring for yourself.
Yeah.
So they need support. They need lots and lots of support.
Mm-hmm. Healthy support.
Healthy support. And they need to identify. Yeah, because there is a lot of unhealthy support, a lot mm-hmm. of voices that might give them all sorts of crazy advice that yeah. doesn't match where they are.
Right.
So, but part of the problem of identifying what you need is identifying it, knowing what it is, but perhaps just because of what we know addiction is like, if someone's been betraying you and being secretive, sometimes that partner has had her voice eroded in the relationship, that they've learned that their voice doesn't matter. Or maybe they learned as a child that their voice didn't matter. And so even getting the support enough to start speaking or thinking about what would help me, what do I need right this moment? That may be a brand new or a healing place for a partner. So again, that's why support is so essential in this early time, so that someone else can remind them that they have a voice, they have a right to use their voice. So when I talk to partners about using their voice and asking for what they need, I always have to be aware that it may not be safe on many levels for them to do that directly right away.
Right.
So a lot of what, when they're using their voice, it is for them. It is for their health, their welfare, their good, their protection.
Right. Right. So what are some of the other situations that would make it difficult for a partner to use her voice?
If there's been, you know, chronic emotional kind of manipulation, abuse, if they've been told that what they think is stupid, that they don't have any right to speak, if they've been told, you know, as a woman, you're not allowed, if they get those kinds of messages. So it's more that chronic sense of, I don't have a right to take up space with my voice.
Right.
Then it's going to be really hard to start to use it. So it's going to take practice, and it's going to take, again, lots of support and encouragement, and knowing that perhaps their voice is used internally. They're stating a boundary. They're stating a reality to themselves, first and foremost. And then if it starts to feel safe enough, then they do that outwardly, perhaps in their relationship. But it starts inside of them. I need, I deserve, it's okay for me to expect. I need some distance. I need some sense of security. I need to know what in the world just happened. So that starts internally. And then we help them start to talk about how do they set that boundary externally to protect themselves.
And to your point, it starts with their worthiness. And when they begin that exercise of, and you're going to talk more about how to actually have those conversations, but even then they're going to experience pushback and they're not going to do it perfectly.
No.
And one of the beauties, I think, of healthy support and community is to take away the shame of feeling like they didn't do it right. Because when you've not known how to do it your whole life, and now you are in this position to exercise your voice, exercise your right to ask for what you need, you're not going to do it perfectly all the time. And that's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay.
There is no perfectly. No. There's no such thing. No such There's thing. Not. So just take that off the table. There's no perfectly.
Exactly.
It's going to be, you're going to experiment with, how do I want to be?
Yes.
How do I want to show up? How do I want to be in this space that, you know, from my belief system, God has given me this life. And so how do I want to be in it?
Yes. Absolutely. Who do we want to be? Maybe not who we are today, not who we are in the midst of the trauma, but who do I want to be?
Yeah.
So what are some examples of how a partner may ask for what she needs?
Is it okay? I want to go ahead and just share. I did some PowerPoint slides, so I'm going to share my screen, and that'll get a little wonky for a second. As I set it up. So can you see that okay?
Yes, ma'am.
Wonderful. All right. So first of all, you kind of have to have an understanding of when do I start to say what I need? And then when do I communicate it? So when is it necessary? When is it important to me? Okay. So the kinds of things I listed here are just like when you don't feel emotionally, physically, sexually safe.
Yeah.
Now, sometimes it's hard for partners to identify, well, of course I'm safe. He's not hitting me or something like that. So do you feel secure? Do you feel like you're allowed to be who you are? Do you feel like your relationship is at desperate risk because of the kinds of behaviors that your loved one's engaged in? Then that doesn't feel safe. So you're feeling unsteady. So think of safety like that. Is something putting me or putting the relationship at risk?
Right.
Then that's when it doesn't feel safe. So that can be emotionally, you know, I'm not feeling validated or valued or honored. I'm feeling abused. I'm feeling mistreated. Perhaps it's physically. I don't feel physically safe enough to be touched by you, you know, even the physical contact, or I don't feel sexually safe to be sexually intimate. If I know that you have been acting out, or I don't know now what you are doing. So it's those kinds of safety needs. So emotionally, physically, sexually, spiritually, we could add. So it's that sense of not feeling cared for or safe in the situation or in the relationship.
Okay.
You can also communicate kind of this boundary or a statement of need if you feel that you're experiencing manipulation in the relationship, like someone's trying to make you feel a little crazy in the things that they're saying. Communicating boundaries can happen when something happens that's triggering you. So a trigger is what brings back the memories, and you're having that emotional and physiological experience of this is going on right now. I don't feel safe. So say someone is doing something like they're on their cell phone all the time. And when you see them on their cell phone all the time and they're just scrolling, that triggers you, then you might say, that doesn't feel good to me. I feel really unsafe when that's happening. Then that would be a trigger. And you could then make a statement or a boundary around that.
Okay.
Or whenever else you feel the need to. Once you start to identify what a boundary is and what it isn't, then it's easier to start to identify when they're needed.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing that gets confusing is sometimes people think that this kind of boundary, setting a boundary, is telling someone else what to do, or it's punishing someone else.
Mm-hmm.
It's a consequence on them. And it's really not. A boundary, this kind of communication, is really you stating what you need,
right,
and asking for what you need, making that request, but then also saying, if I don't get the kinds of things I need to feel safe, then I will need to do something. So a boundary is always something that you have control over on how you're going to respond, which again is a really empowering process once the partner gets that it's about what am I going to do? And that's hard, because then you have to figure out, what am I willing to do?
Yeah.
What can I do right now? And it doesn't have to be this huge leap.
Right.
It can be the tiniest of things that empowers the partner to say, I can take care of myself. I can do things that are going to help protect me. So that's what a boundary is.
Well said, Barbara.
Yeah. Again, we get really confused. We have partners have all these consequences lists. If you do this, you're going to have to do this and this. And I'm going to, how do you enforce that?
Yeah.
And so go back to what is empowering is, what are you going to do? How are you going to show up? How are you going to stand up for yourself?
That's right.
That's when growth happens. And it's so exciting to watch it happen.
It is.
Partners start to do that.
And I will, often facilitate a boundary orientation between a partner and her husband. And I, you know, to put his mind at ease, I said, this is not a laundry list of what you can and can't do. This is what your partner needs to feel safe engaging in relationship and to be willing to stay and leave space and room for you to heal and be a part of her healing process. So boundaries are in agreement.
They are.
They are in agreement. He has the right to say no. And to your point, she gets to decide what she wants to do with his no. It's totally her. And she may choose to do nothing and just put that information away as important data for her. She may choose to impose a consequence. She may make a choice to do nothing. It's still her choice.
They really are amazing, but for a lot of us, we didn't learn these. We weren't allowed to have these. Our voice was squashed. And so again, part of the beauty of helping a partner start to come into this for themselves is it not only impacts their relationship with this person who just shattered their life, it impacts everything. And it mostly impacts their sense of love and care for themselves. So I want to go over a simple kind of formulaic kind of way of setting a boundary. So it's as simple as when you, whatever it is someone is doing, I feel, or it brings up for me, so I respond. And I need to feel or I need to experience. Therefore, if this happens, it can happen again, I will. And then it's whatever that person will do. So I'm going to give an example. So let's say your spouse says they want to do recovery work, but you don't see your spouse doing any of that work that they said they were going to do. And they said, yes, I want recovery. I'm going to do whatever it takes. But you're not observing it. You know, they're not reading. They're not going to group. They're not making regular appointments with their therapist. They don't have an accountability person, whatever that looks like. And for the partner, then they're starting to go, what's going on? I don't feel safe. Is he really wanting recovery or not? And then we work with, well, what do you need? What do you want to be able to see? And what are you going to do if that doesn't happen? So then I put together, this is like a sample boundary statement that a partner can give if they're not seeing their loved one do recovery work. So when I don't see you doing the recovery work you said you would do, so I'm not observing it. You may tell me all day long, I'm not seeing you do your recovery work. I feel really unsafe. And I'm sad and I'm afraid. I don't want to feel like that in a relationship, and I shouldn't have to. So there she's saying what she feels and what she needs. Right. I need to feel safe. If you don't show me that you're doing recovery activities, I will have to assume that you're not. You're not doing what you said you would do, and I will take action to protect myself. And you can do that. You can just say, I am going to have to take action to protect myself, and I will consider my options. You don't have to say right away what you're going to do because you might not know yet.
Right.
But you can still say, this is not okay. I don't feel good about it, and I am going to have to do something. Right. So what is needed? So perhaps reality, just I need to see the reality of who you are and what you're doing, and I'm not seeing that. I need to behave in ways that help me stay in reality.
Right.
So part of, you know, when someone's acting out and not being honest about it is our reality, sense of reality can get distorted. So a boundary helps a partner stay in their own reality. This isn't okay with me. Perhaps the partner needs space. You know, I just need some distance right now. this is feeling scary for me and I'm getting triggered a lot. So I need some, maybe it's physical space, maybe it's emotional space. Perhaps the need is just reducing triggers. You know, they're getting triggered so much, they're activated all the time. It's really hard to start to calm. And so a boundary can help them move into a space where physiologically in their body, they can start to feel safer. And just pure safety. You know, a boundary can be, this is not okay with me. This is not safe for me. And so I will move back so that I can experience a sense of safety, because being too close feels really scary and unsafe. So I will need to do something to protect my safety. So those are the reasons why you set boundaries. You got to stay in reality. Reality is, this is crazy and I don't want to pretend it's normal when it's not. And a boundary helps me stay in my own reality, create space, reduces triggers, and can really promote safety.
Yes.
So here's just some examples, and then I'll stop my slides and stuff. So Okay. Examples might be, you know, as a result of him not doing his recovery work, I'm going to be a little more emotionally distant. I care about you. I want you to do well, but I can't really put a lot of emotional energy into you right now or into our relationship because I don't see you being a safe person right now. So emotional distance.
That's good.
It could be physical distance. It could be, I'm going to need to not sleep in the same room with you. I'm going to request that you move out of the bedroom. But if it's a request, the person can also say no. So then if they say no, then you do it.
That's right.
Then you do it. Change your interactions or don't interact. So perhaps that's, you know, I don't see you doing the recovery work. I'm feeling unsafe. And yet we go out and we're with family and friends and act like everything's okay. I can't pretend everything's okay. It's not. So right. I'm not going to go out in public right now together. Maybe it's something like that, because that reflects reality for the partner and doesn't keep up the pretense of everything's fine.
Right.
So that's just an idea. Or don't interact. Maybe I'll share a very personal one that I said. I love you and I care about you, but you're not doing the recovery work or you're not doing whatever it is, and I cannot be your emotional support right now. So I will talk business with you, but that's all.
Mm-hmm.
Until I see the things that help me feel safer. So something like that. Change what you do for the relationship. Again, if reality is this is a fractured relationship, you don't see the person contributing to creating safety in the relationship, then what can you stop doing in the relationship that reflects reality for you? So I will work with partners who say, yeah, I still cook dinner every night, or I do everyone's laundry. And I go, you do everyone's laundry? And I just like, it's just the question of what would it be like if you just stopped doing that?
Yeah.
Just to reflect the reality of things are not normal. Things right. are not the way they should be. Or whatever that is. And you can get really creative, but it can be a tiny thing, but it reflects reality of I don't feel safe or this is not okay. Provide a time frame. You know, I can hang out for 3 weeks and see you do this, but after 3 weeks, then I'm going to have to think about what I need to do.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to do that. And then obtain outside support for your boundary. It's really helpful if you are to this place of stating what you need and using your voice, that you have some support person that knows you're doing this, because they can check in with you and say, how's that going? What's going on with that boundary that you set? How are you taking care of yourself? Because this is hard to do, especially if you're trying to do this with someone who isn't playing along. You know, they're not in recovery yet, or they're still kind of walking that line. And so they may try to tell you you're crazy, you're controlling, you're abusive. They may say all sorts of things to try to encourage you to no longer use your voice. And so having people that are going to cheer you on is essential at this point. So obtain outside support for your boundary. So state what you need. Think about how will I respond if my need is not met so that I can protect myself.
Right.
That's a simple boundary. I'm going to stop sharing now.
Definitely. That was so good. Thank you for clarifying the boundaries and what they are and what they're not.
Yeah.
And it can be a really scary place when your partner continues to push back.
Yeah.
And they are not honoring your boundaries. And you and the partner is then put in a position to decide what she wants to do with his unwillingness to honor them.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine being able to navigate that without a support system behind you.
Oh, no, I don't think that it's, maybe it's possible, but it's certainly not ideal. And
yeah,
we were made to be in community. We were made to be in a relationship. And when there's been betrayal, that primary relationship is fractured until there's a good amount of recovery. That's not your go-to support person. And so you need those people. They're kind of like the first responders in your life. To come help you breathe, help you think about drinking water, to help remind you that you are worth and valuable and worth doing these things for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So community is essential. Yeah. I want to say one other thing, just as I'm thinking about, we talked earlier about sometimes these boundaries are just for you.
Yes.
Sometimes it is absolutely not safe to verbalize a boundary, but you still do them. You determine in yourself, you write it out. Mm-hmm. You say, when I see this happening, this is not okay with me. This is what I'm going to do. And then you let someone know that's your boundary, but it's a safe person. And then they encourage you as you start to establish those for yourself. I've worked with lots of women where it's not been safe to verbalize the boundary because it's been used against them, or it just increases their sense of not being safe in the relationship. But their internal boundaries and the steps that they took to take good care of themselves saved them.
Yes.
So I just want to encourage, just as we're talking about the role of community here, for safety, community is essential. And for encouragement, community is essential.
It really is. And, you know, Barb, that was a part of my story. It was not safe. I had taken all the steps of setting these boundaries and making requests and pushback. And I had got to the place to where I had taken care of, I knew internally what my next step was going to be. I shared that with safe people, but I did not share that with him because it would have not been safe for me, for my children. And that was the step of divorce. And he did not know I took that boundary until he was served. And it was a very difficult decision. There's a lot of women who find themselves in that position. And, you know, to those women, I want to say that sometimes the boundary of divorce is, it doesn't necessarily have to be the end, and it can be the next step in your process, or it could be the end. You get to decide. But the point is it's not always safe to say to your husband or your partner, if you do this, I'm divorcing you.
Right.
It's most of the time, that's not a safe, safe statement to make.
Yeah. So. And especially if there's any kind of physical or sexual abuse that's gone in the relationship, remember a boundary is for you.
That's right.
All you're doing is communicating to another human being. When you communicate a boundary, you're communicating to them how you're going to care for yourself.
That's right.
And you don't have to share that, but it's still important for you to know what those values and those boundaries are for you.
Yeah.
So again, do that in the context of safe relationships, that can support you and encourage you as you're figuring out, you know, what are my bottom lines in the relationship, or what do I need today just to get through the day?
Absolutely.
But have them help you set those for yourself. And then if you feel safe enough, and if this is, you know, the relationship has a chance here and it's safe enough, then it's important to communicate those boundaries, but you don't ever have to. Again, we are empowering women, empowering partners to take good care of themselves and to act on their own behalf, to ask for what they need when it's safe, but certainly to take action to protect themselves and to find safety.
Absolutely. I know that there's going to be women watching this who are going to rewind, pause, write, rewind, listen to it over and over again until it becomes true for you, is my encouragement to women. So if you could suggest one thing for betrayed partners to do to help themselves heal after betrayal, what would it be?
Oh, we've already talked about it. Get in a community, find connection. When I was dealing with this, there was nothing, absolutely nothing. My first work with partners was making myself available in the basement of a church if other women needed support. So, and that's a lifeline. So, and now we have so many options and places for partners to connect with others who are going through very similar things, same things. So find community, because they're going to be your cheerleaders, your place to go to find sanity, to get encouragement, to receive prayer, all the things that you need. When your other support systems won't know how, this community is a ready-made group of people who get it.
Yeah.
You don't have to explain it.
Absolutely. Yep. And especially, I'm glad you mentioned about the church basement, especially within the church. You know, I would love to see churches all across the world, you know, adopt the need for a group specifically for a partner.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because this betrayal changes us. And, and there's a lot of shame attached to sometimes our reactivity and some of the words that may come out of our mouth or the behaviors that we engage in that are not typical of our character. And to have a safe group of, you know, like-minded Christian women who accept you without judgment, just that alone reduces the shame and helps us heal, helps us grow, helps us feel empowered. So, you know, I really, that's one of my prayers, is that churches have that.
Yeah. And one of my passions right now and one of my endeavors with APSOTS is putting together training for faith communities on how to be safe places. So I'm really excited about that. So we're doing betrayal trauma religious leader training now.
Oh, it's so needed.
Yeah.
It is so, and I'm sure we'll be hearing more about that in the future from APSAS.
Yep. Yep, you will.
Okay. Okay. So since we do have a little bit of time left, I would like to ask, what did the process look like for your own healing and growth?
I had a hard time finding support and finding my community. So, I had a couple of really, really close friends, and they became my community. And then eventually I developed a community. So I started offering, you know, like I said, in the basement of a church, no one else is offering this for partners, so I'll sit here with you. And so I learned from them and they learned from me. So that became my community, but it was not ideal, but it worked. I got my own therapist for a while, and that was wonderful. And she didn't really get it, but she understood me and she valued me and she affirmed me and she did the things that helped. So, and finding purpose and redemption being really, really firm on my boundaries. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that I had the capacity to be as firm as I was. Mm-hmm. And that helped me a lot. Mm-hmm. Helped me put energy into myself and what do I want and what do I need? What am I called to do? And I am a stronger, more courageous, and just a more alive person now than I was before.
Yes.
So the growth that can come out of this when you're in the middle of it doesn't feel like you're ever going to breathe fully again. But when you're kind of on another side of this process and growing in resilience, there's all sorts of amazing things that can happen as you can really step into being fully who you were created to be.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's what I've been able to do, step in to who I was fully created to be.
Yeah. You know, earlier you said you were stronger than you
than I thought
could
I
be more firm. And mm-hmm. so, you know, I know you personally. Mm-hmm. I've met you. I've met your husband. Mm-hmm. And this matters what I'm about to say. You know, Barbara she is a petite woman and her husband is really tall. And so I bet that could have been really intimidating mm-hmm. to have these really strong and firm conversations with mm-hmm. this really, really big man who could easily use his big boy voice and feel really intimidating. Mm-hmm. But you just like lifted that chest up a little bit more and mm-hmm. I know my worth. Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask for what I need.
Yeah. I had a tiny feisty grandma and I think that I kind of internalized her, this feisty grandma. And so now I'm a feisty grandma actually. So
are you?
Yeah. So, but yes. Yeah. Coming you into are. Ourselves and realizing we're bigger on the inside than maybe what we look at like on the outside. Huh?
That's right. That's right. So on your own journey, what have you learned along the way?
Well, that resilience and growth is not only possible, it's the goal. For me, that there is not a thing that happens that God can't redeem and turn into something beautiful, that's a true reality. But I know that in the middle of the pain, I need to honor the pain.
Oh yeah.
Don't jump over it. Don't try to avoid it. It's real. It's the reality. Yeah. So sometimes we push to resilience and that's the vision, but the reality is important to honor that. The reality is something crushing happened that should not have happened. And if we don't honor that when we see that in each other, then we're missing each other.
Oh my gosh, that was so beautifully said. Grief is really a gift.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not, we don't have to be afraid of it.
No, it means something happened.
That's right.
That you didn't want, you didn't expect, and shouldn't mm-hmm. have happened.
That's right. That's all we have time for. And I'm just devastated. I hate it that we're out of time, but we are. So I hope that you leave here today with a deeper understanding of the impact of betrayal and trauma on a betrayed spouse. Mm-hmm. I hope that you've gained some clarity on the potential barriers to healing, as well as boundary setting. And also hope that you understand, and if you don't understand this after this conversation, go back and listen again, the absolute value of healthy community for healing and resilience. So thank you for joining us today. Mm-hmm. And thank you so much, Barbara, for being here and for your time and your expertise and your willingness to share that and your gift with the world. And again, thank you for being a voice for all of the voiceless mm-hmm. and for teaching us that we are worthy to use our voice and take up space in this world.
Thank you so much. It's been an honor.
truly it has been an honor for me too.
You've been listening to Betrayal Recovery Radio, the official podcast of APSAT. If you've received help or hope from this episode, I encourage you to share it with someone you know. If you've not yet done so, please subscribe to our podcast on your favorite listening platform. Thank you for joining us. I'm Dr. Jake Porter, and you can always email me directly at jake@apsats.org. I'd love to hear your ideas, questions, or comments about the show. Until next time, keep choosing to use your voice and live your values. It's good for you and for this world.